Hey there, thanks for dropping in. I'm Burton White, co-founder and CEO of Exela. And this year we're celebrating Exela's 20th anniversary. And in doing so, we've been reflecting a lot on the last 20 years, not just about what's going on at Exela, but also around technology and in our industry generally and all our clients. And so we thought it'd be fun to record some of these thoughts and conversations and share them with all of you. So here's our first one. And today I'm joined by my co-founder, Jeff Gallimore, who's also our Chief Technology and Innovation Officer. And we're going to talk a little bit about his favorite topic, which is technology and how that intersects with people and enables people and so forth. So that's our conversation today. Jeff, thanks for being part of this.
My pleasure.
All right. Well, in 20 years, we've been doing this for 20 years. So thanks, partner. It's been a good 20 years, hadn't it?
It's been my great pleasure, partner.
So I was kind of amusing myself thinking back to some of the early projects that we worked on, some of the technologies that we were working on early that at the time seemed so daunting, the challenges, the technical challenges we're trying to overcome. But you probably have some of your own favorite memories. What were some of the early projects that come to mind for you?
One of the first projects that I was on just after we started Exela. In fact, I think it was the first project that I had after we started Exela was building a custom content management system for a federal agency which shall be named remain nameless. And we were using a project called or a product called WebLogic at the time, which was total overkill for this thing. Like I said, we were custom building a content management system to handle like rules and regulations and the management of those and the workflows. So it was basically taking a bunch of unstructured content and documents and turning it into structured content in an object-oriented application and a relational database, so that the agency could manage it with their own business rules. And I remember doing the design and standing up the application and helping the team doing the coding and the implementation of this. It was just, thinking back on this, like we would never, ever do that today because we've had the rise of the search engines. So, I mean, I was thinking about this. Google was founded in 1998. So when we started Exela 20 years ago, Google was only a few years old.
4 years old.
Like it wasn't even a thing back then. And then fast forward even further. Well, now we're using AI and machine learning and things like natural language processing to like suck content and insights out of these documents, unstructured documents, in a way that we never would have done before, or we didn't really have it accessible in terms of the technology and the compute and the storage and all that stuff. But in a way that gives us a lot of power for being able to process things in a way that we've never been able to, certainly 20 years ago.
It's unbelievable. I haven't thought about WebLogic forever,
I
and
know.
it's so great. And you're right. We've never built a custom content management system today, but at the time that made good sense.
That was what was needed to solve the problem.
Yes. Well, and that's kind of enterprise tech stuff. I was thinking about our own personal tech, and that's obviously transformed, by a thousandfold. But what were think about 20 years ago, what were the personal technologies that you were dabbling in?
Yeah, I don't know about dabbling, but I'll tell you one technology that's still a thing today that was a big thing 20 years ago was Bluetooth. Like I remember the coolness of being able to take my mobile phone and pair it with the earpiece. All those
Jawbone,
people,
a jawbone.
I had a Jawbone. Yes, I did. I remember like all those people that used to walk around on the sidewalks and they'd always have, or in the meet, they would be in the office and they would always have the earpiece connected. I was not one of those people, but Bluetooth enabled that.
First time you saw it, you thought somebody was talking to themselves walking down the street.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And it was just such a, a neat technology to be able to pair all of these disparate devices like phones and earpieces and then later cars and speakers and all kinds of stuff. And now today, like I still love Bluetooth because we still use it. It's still, you know, for all the things. But now, now the technology that I have become profoundly appreciative of is voice assistants, you know, like Alexa and Google Assistants and how they can support things like home automation. So I've gone through an effort over the last few years of like automating all the things in my house, you know, lights and fans and all that stuff. And I can interact, and my wife and my family can interact with these devices and with our house through their voice.
Well, and as you're saying it, the device over here on my desk, whose name is Alexa, is kind of going bananas because keeps hearing her name and not getting any instruction. So I know it's unbelievable. We have all kinds of fun in our house with the devices, and the accuracy is unbelievable. Yeah. How often the device gets it right.
I know some
strange question and you get a pretty good answer back.
Right. And being a technologist, I can't just appreciate the technology on its face. Like I have to understand the guts behind it. And so understanding all of the complex technology and logic and processing and intelligence, if you want to call it that, that lives in those environments and behind those systems is just, it's totally fascinating to me.
Yeah. Well, I, of course, being the technology professional in the house, everybody asks me how it works. I have no idea, but I just say a lot of big words and hope that it persuades them.
Does that work for you?
It does work. It usually works, except the kids now know more than I do. All right. Well, so you have, over the years, you have frequently, fondly cited that very famous operational framework of people, process, and technology. And you always say in that order of importance. And that too, I mean, that what goes into that framework has changed dramatically in the 20 years. What's one that you really point out as the biggest transformation in that category, those categories?
Wow. The biggest one. I'll start with probably the most recent and then kind of go back. I think DevOps and DevSecOps or, you know, Dev whatever ops, I think is the biggest one. Because the more I've learned about DevOps and the movement and what's behind all of that, the more I understand how much that term ties things together, how broad a reach that movement has into like such disparate things that actually hit at the people and the process and the technology, all of that stuff. And it just brings it all together. There's a big myth out there, I think, which is becoming less prevalent than it used to be. And that's that DevOps was really all about technology or is really all about technology. And it's not. I mean, technology is certainly a part of that. But really, it's about ways of working and the mindsets and the practices that we use to do work, humans doing stuff with other humans. So that's sort of the biggest one. But I could unpack each of these. In fact, when I think about the people and I think about process and I think about technology, I can think of examples in each of those areas of things that really maybe weren't a thing 20 years ago, but now are. So for example, with people, there's been, particularly over the last maybe 5 or 6 years, especially, has been this understanding of the importance of culture and its impact on teams and organizations and the ability to influence performance. We hear this term a lot called psychological safety. That's always been a thing, but it really has entered the common vocabulary really in the last maybe few years. And that's a people thing. In terms of process, here was something that I realized. The Agile Manifesto was created in early 2001. So just over 20 years ago. So at the time that we started Accela, that wasn't even really a thing.
And no one, certainly when we were starting, no one had heard of it.
No, they hadn't. And now it's sort of the, you know, the de facto way of doing things. We've got, you know, opinions of about agile and agility and doing versus being and all that stuff. But now we're seeing the application of lean practices to technology. So bringing in practices from the manufacturing world. And here's a little known fact for you. Actually, it's not that little known. At least I know it. The Phoenix Project, which is it's a book by Gene Kim, which is a novel about technology and DevOps. That was actually patterned. That book was patterned after a book called The Goal, that was written back in the 80s by Eliyahu Goldratt, which was about the lean manufacturing movement. So, you know, what works for manufacturing apparently also works for technology. And then speaking of technology, something that wasn't a thing 20 years ago was the cloud. We remember when, you know, what it took to provision new environments in our technology organizations. You know, you'd have to
fill out the form. Yeah, fill out the form, work it out months and months ahead.
Right. Right. And then, you know, the equipment would show up and then you'd have to rack it and provision it and all of it connected up and all that stuff. And now we've got the cloud where you can, for better or for worse, you can do things in minutes with a credit card if you wanted to. And it's just enabling scale that we haven't thought of before or haven't dreamed of before. It's enabling speed in the way that we've never dreamed of before. And one of the other interesting things I think about with respect to the cloud is it also enables managing business risk in a way that we've really never thought of before. It doesn't require companies to make these massive bets way in advance of something. So they can decrease their risk and create options and flexibility for what it is that they're doing. And I think that's pretty cool too. Of that existed 20 years ago.
None of it. Well, okay. And as I was asking the question, I thought for sure we were going to land on Agile as the top change. But I have to say, you're talking about DevSecOps and DevOps. I might have longed for that more than anything, not knowing it 20 years ago. How many times was I on a call at 2 a.m. deploying code, and you had to do it at 2 a.m. because you could shut down the system then? And you had to wait for everybody to come online, and then somebody wasn't there and somebody fell asleep halfway through when it was their turn to take some step. So maybe the quality of life is improved more by DevSecOps than anything else.
That is a whole separate discussion, and okay. I 1,000% agree with you. The days of the weekend release window should be gone.
Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. Should be gone. Big changes. All right. So I think another big area of change is how we think about equity. Probably you could put in a cousin to that is just ethics around technology. As technology is becoming so powerful, we're thinking about all of that much more than we used to. So what do you think is, how are we thinking about that stuff 20 years ago compared to today?
So it is awesome that we are thinking about equity and technology and ethics and things like that. And to be honest, this is also a tough topic for me, because this is when it becomes less about the technology and more about the people. About human beings, and that's when it starts to bring out some feels. So, you talked about the technology being powerful, and it absolutely is. And with any power, that power can be used constructively for good and in helpful ways, and it can also be used in harmful ways, either intentionally or unintentionally. So, I've come to appreciate and understand that. And then one of the things I also know about me is that I get, as you could probably tell, and you certainly have known me long enough to know this, that I get really excited about using technology to create opportunities for other people that they might not have had before. So that's something that gets me really fired up. And I know I'm not alone. There are many others out there who are excited about using technology for good too. But unlike 20 years ago, today we're much more cognizant of the potential for unintended negative consequences. So we need to be much more thoughtful about the risks that are associated with the systems and the technology that we create today. It seems like, you know, most of the examples that we hear about these days have to do with AI-based technologies, especially as it relates to bias. It's also why organizations need to spend more time thinking about AI ethics and responsible AI and explainable AI. It goes by a bunch of different names. And this is also one reason among many why inclusion, diversity, and equity is so important, because we'll be able to spot those risks better and be able to address them more effectively. And then also, unlike 20 years ago, we appreciate much more that that different people experience the world differently. And we need to take that into account as we build the build and deploy technology. I think that's one of the reasons that the field of customer experience has evolved as much as it has and become such a high priority for organizations. We want to delight our customers and the people who use our technology, and that takes a lot more effort and expertise than it did 20 years ago. User expectations have evolved quite a bit in two decades. And this is another of the many reasons for inclusion, diversity, and equity, to better understand, value, and design for different individuals and communities.
Yeah, totally. Well, okay. And so I feel like for our kids, I keep telling my kids, and they're not that interested in, say, coding and that part of technology. And I've said, well, if you really want to be part of the next big thing, study philosophy and the humanities, because it's the ethics that are really going to be the challenge. Technology is tough on AI and so forth, but making the ethical decisions is going to be even bigger and tougher.
Yeah.
What do you think about that topic?
Yeah. So you're right. The ethics, kind of generally with respect to technology, but really especially with artificial intelligence, that ethics part of the conversation is really taking center stage in a lot of organizations, because of some of the interesting, we'll call it interesting dynamics within AI implementations. So what do I mean by that? Well, first of all, here's the thing for you. If you train AI algorithms on biased data, you get biased outputs. Like, that stands to reason. Like, it makes logical sense, but I don't think we fully appreciated that, like, coming into all of this.
For sure.
We didn't really have an appreciation for the bias that was inherent in a lot of our data. A product of, you know, the environment and the decisions that we had made and history and all of those things.
All right. So yeah, bias and the bias that can be in the data is such a big thing. It's just, it's a huge potential pitfall. And so virtually every organization out there now is being called on to bring AI into their enterprise to make it, to make use of AI and all its power. And yet there are pitfalls like the one you just noticed. So what do you think are the top few things that we got to help our clients navigate as they go into this new brave frontier of AI?
I'm limited to just a few. I have to pick just
yes.
a few.
Yes. It's a brief, a brief podcast.
Okay. So here are the things that we're seeing in the conversations that I'm having here's what I'm hearing about. So first of all, we've already talked about the AI ethics part. And so whether you call that transparency or responsible AI or explainable AI or ethical AI, organizations are really grappling with how to use this technology in a ethical, responsible way. And that's why we've got these, we actually spent some time internally to come up with our own AI ethics guidelines for when we engage in projects like this, how we're going to show up and the decisions and the frameworks and the principles that we're going to use to help our clients navigate this. So that's one. I think another one, when you look at AI, well, AI systems are fed by data, and organizations really have to look at the quality of the data that they have, that they're feeding these systems. And they have to look at how they're maintaining that quality and how they're governing all of the data assets that they have within their enterprise. And so you really have to scrutinize that data quality and make sure that you're governing it correctly and governing it well. I think another one that we have started to hear some about is now the we'll call it the friction between normal quote agile ways of working that we've seen in typical software development efforts, and how that's not really necessarily matching up really well with AI implementations and how we build those. Because of the really experimental nature and the hypothesis-driven nature of AI implementations. So Agile is great. Agile methodologies and approaches are really great at getting work done with speed and quality and all of that. But we're now bringing some new dimensions into our teams, which is this: I'm really not sure what the right answer is at the beginning. I have to experiment my way into the right answer. And so how do you bring agility into those kinds of efforts? And it looks a little bit different than what we've been used to. And then probably the last one that I'll pick, there's probably a million other ones that I could talk about too. The one that maybe the most scary is security. And now we know how important security is and how scary a proposition that is to protect our organizations and enterprises from bad actors out there. Well, we've now got new threat vectors with AI implementations. So there's this term that I learned about. It's called model poisoning. And so bad actors can use certain tactics to actually change how AI implementations operate by feeding it different data. And it starts to make the, here's a technical term for you, make the thing go wonky. And so you have to now protect from new threat vectors to make sure that your system is doing what it's intending to do, what you intended it to do. So there's a lot of challenges out there. There's a lot of new, for sure.
New shortage every time we have one of these new things. I love your point about data, just almost like a starting point. That's the issue always, even in some of our early projects. 15 years ago, we would be doing projects to help with analytics. And the first thing we realize is we got to clean up the data before we can put any analytics on top of it. So lots to chew on. The great thing about technology is that it's always changing. And so we always have new challenges and ways of applying what we've learned from the past into these new frontiers. So what do you say we do this for another 20 years?
I'm in if you are.
All right. We've got lots of cool stuff to chew on. So let's do it. All right. Jeff, thanks. This has been fun.
It's been my pleasure. It has been fun. We'll do it again in 20 years.
All right. And for those of you listening, tune in to our upcoming topics. We'll explore other things, other big areas of transformation over the last 20 years. Thanks for tuning in.